So, is there someone who would like to shine these signs to us so that we know we need to stop? So at 7 minutes, hold this up, please. Thank you. So there is a 10-minute left one, too, and we're like, well, we're only talking for 12, so we don't need to have 10-minute warning. Okay, so, okay, let's get started. So I wanted to start out and say that I knew that the 12 steps were the answer. The first for my problem, the first OA meeting I went to was in 1979 in Chicago. And I thought those people were completely insane. And I was like, I just want to lose weight. I don't know what they're doing. I ended up moving and many times. And I came back in 2016. I did some other 12-step programs in between, but I came back to OA in 2016 and started listening to Vision for You and got a vision sponsor, did the 12 steps as it says to do it in the big book. And I've now been abstinent since February 18th, 2016, and I've lost about 85 pounds. I'm passing out my pictures are coming around a little book. Okay, so to talk about God, so I believe that we are body, mind, and spirit. Body's pretty obvious. Mind's pretty obvious. Spirit, you know, where's that come from? Well, when I was a little girl, and I would get into the cookies and eat the cookies, and I was then filled with shame, and I wanted to hide, and I would not admit that I had been in the cookies. Well, where did that come from? That, you know, that wasn't me. There was some reason that I knew that that was wrong. And so I believe that that was God telling me that. My parents probably told me, you can't have more than one cookie. But, you know, but the shame, the hiding, all of that started back then. And so my history of eating, I never ate in front of anybody. You know, if you saw what I ate, you thought that I was, you know, why wasn't I skinny? Because, you know, I ate nicely. I believe that my creator put his spirit in me to give me a conscience so that I could know how to act. Could I know right from wrong? So before this program, I was all about appearance. I wanted you to recognize that I was the most brilliant person you had ever met. I wanted you to think that I was perfect. I wanted you to be pleased with me. And if you weren't, I was going to I would be angry, furious, upset, silently. Because, you know, I was nice Nancy, so, you know, I wasn't going to be nasty Nancy. So so I would be that silently, but then I would have to escape into the food because I had all that pressure. I had to do something. So anyway, my eating was always done in secret. My life became more and more Jekyll and Hyde. I would get up in the morning. I would put on my face of, you know, who was I going to be to you? Because I wanted to be who you wanted me to be. And then the pressure would build because I really wasn't that. And so then I would eventually have to escape the situation and go into the food. So fast forward, what happened? Well, God let me keep doing this for years and years and years and years. I sought out every diet on the planet. I was a champion researcher. I did all the things. None of the things worked. And I was furiously trying to find everything, you know, to fix everything. So I had been trying to lose weight my whole life, and I thought that if I would lose the weight, I would be happy, peaceful, life would be nice, I wouldn't be so tired all the time, my life would relax a little bit, I could, you know, life would just be so good if I could just lose the weight. That was all I needed to do, was to lose the weight. And I couldn't. I was just driving myself into the ground. So God let me do that. He let me keep doing that. And he led me to this ultimate desperation where I was willing to do what I needed to do. And I know that it was God who was doing this because it was not coming from me. You know, I know what it looks like when I'm trying to do something. I'm in a frenzy. I'm obsessive. I'm doing research. I'm doing all these things. And then God would just be like, okay, do you really need to do all that? So that God, that higher power, was telling me that there was a better solution. There was a better way. So I came to see that my life wasn't for me to run. And who knew that? I mean, good grief. I was all about running my life. I was all about, I know what I'm supposed to do, and I know how I'm supposed to do it. And, you know, get out of my way. I'm going to be successful. And so I came to find out that God was calling on me to serve him and to serve others, which is what the big book says, which is also what my religion says. Who knew? Who knew that those two things would actually go together and not fight one another? So I found that that was my purpose and that I couldn't do it. I couldn't force myself to do service. I mean, I did. I forced myself to do service. I went to church. I went to, you know, I helped people. And I thought, why am I not getting relief from this? Well, the reason why I wasn't getting relief was because I was still trying to run the show. I was still trying to run all the shows, everything. And even my doing service was me running the show. So I finally had to come to the point where I said, I can't do it. So then I love the third step prayer. The first part says, God, I offer myself to thee to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self so that I may better do your will. The bondage of self, that is my favorite line. Who knew I was in bondage? I was actually in bondage to myself. And when I heard that phrase, I knew it was true. I knew that God was calling me to himself, and that wasn't bondage to Nancy. That I needed to be, if I was going to be in bondage, I needed to be in bondage to God. But, you know, I really wasn't, because he set me free. So I was in bondage to myself, and I couldn't fix myself. So where did that leave me? I was just stuck in this big hole of desperation. The food wouldn't fix me anymore. I knew that I was trying to run the show and I couldn't do it. What was going to happen next? What was going to happen? So finally, if I had a mission, did I have a mission? Was my mission to serve God and to serve others? Yeah, that was my mission. That's what it says, like I said, in the big book. And so that didn't sound anything like serving Nancy. So I was like, okay, that's not going very well. So then the third step prayer goes on to take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, thy way of life. So then, whose power, whose love, whose way of life? Nancy's? No, it's still God. So it's like, okay, wait a minute. Everything I've been thinking, me running all the shows, me doing everything, I have seen firsthand that I am unsuccessful. And I'm getting into deeper and deeper into this hole of unsuccessfulness. That isn't a word, but anyway. And then I'm reading the big book, and it's telling me this is who I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to serve God and serve others. So then I finally became willing to say, okay, I want what the big book says. I'm willing to step away from the food and do the steps entirely abstinent. So fast forward to today. So today, I'm no longer Jekyll and Hyde. I'm no longer putting on that mask in the morning to be somebody else. I've been doing an 11-step with somebody recently who's talking to me about every night when I talk to her, she's like, wow, your life is so full. And I realize my life is so full and I'm not escaping. You know, before my life was overfull and I was escaping all as often as I could. Today, my life is full. I'm helping people. I'm doing all these things. I'm busy all the time. And I never have to go look for the food to escape. Praise God. I mean, that did not come from me. There's absolutely no way. I was completely incapable of that because I tried for, 60 years to try to do that. So today, my life is full. I've lost, as I told you, I've lost 85 pounds. I'm a completely different person, and life is a complete miracle. And I pass.
Thanks.
I'm Bill, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Bill.
See, should I be standing?
Whatever you want.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No rule.
All right, then I will sit. All right. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I particularly wanted to talk about relationships to God. This is the thing that has really made the most difference in my life since I got into 12-step programs. Now, when I actually first came in, I came in an atheist. I did not want to be involved in anything that had anything to do with God because it was a waste of time. I said, there's no such thing as God, and it can't possibly do anything but waste your time. Now, I told people that I was an agnostic because that offended fewer people, you know. But I did not want to be involved in this thing at all. Now, once I got in, I started going to meetings and things like that and started getting around and really reading the We Agnostic chapter. Now, what it said to me, to some degree, is it's irrelevant whether God exists or not, actually. It said acting like God exists is what helps you, essentially. You can make up a God yourself. Now, I stopped believing in God in church. I had a family that believed in God. All of my friends believed in God. But it was things that I heard in church that sort of really said, hey, this can't possibly be true. And for instance, I guess when I was about 8 or 9, they explained how my religion was the right religion. I had come to the right church. All those others were phony religions. Those people wouldn't get to go to heaven, no matter if they were good and did things right and all that, no sinning. They would not go to heaven. We would. I had a problem with that. That has a whole lot of problems, you know, and particularly the one that the other people are probably saying the same thing, you know. So, but what I did find, when reading the We Agnostic chapter, was that acting like it, they suggested even getting your own God. If you don't like the gods that are out there, they said get your own God, you know, what the heck, you know. Now, in the church that I went to, getting your own God is where you go to hell. But that made sense to me, okay? I mean, they are basically saying they changed this stuff from being religion to being mental therapy. You just get a God, you do what that God wants, and it will get there. Hearing that, they got me on board. Now, in a sense, I am still an atheist because I don't believe that stuff that I got in church. But I do believe that acting like there is a God is going to help you. I actually believe that, even though I don't believe there's God, I believe that the concept of God is the best behavior modification tool on the planet. Thank you.
I'm Harlan. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I came in 1979, and I have 21 years of abstinence, and I have 40 years in the program. 41 years as of February 2nd of this year, I have 41 years in the program. And it's the most magnificent way of life imaginable. I'm going to start my timer here because I forgot to do the thing. Okay. We look at Ebbie Thatcher, and Ebbie brings Bill Wilson a message that he was uniquely qualified to carry. Why was he so uniquely qualified to carry this message? Because Bill knew that Ebbie was an alcoholic. And Bill knew Ebbie for a long time. And Bill was drunk and Ebbie was sober. And Ebbie is telling Bill Wilson how he got sober. And he eventually comes around to this God-based, spirituality-based solution. And Bill's not having this. Certainly, there's got to be a harder way. Certainly, you know, every alcoholic, every compulsive overeater, we are sensitive, immature rebels. Sensitive, immature rebels. And Bill Wilson is struggling with this idea of a God-based solution, and Ebbie Thatcher changed the world, changed the history, the course of Earth, when he says to Bill Wilson, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And one of the things that I see is sponsors spending inordinate amount of time on food plans. The red light, the yellow light, the green light, the orange light, the pink light, the purple light. And we pound those food plans, boy. We pound them, man. We pound those food plans. And I see people, and you'll see it today, they're going to send pictures of their food to their sponsor. And if that works for you, I'm not knocking it. I'm just using it as an example. But what sponsors often don't do in OA is read the second step and read into what's going on here. Food was never the problem in the first place. Food is the solution to the problem. Now, if food is the solution to the problem, what's the problem? The problem is the buildup of everyday, normal, human emotion. We can't handle that. In a normal person that is scared or happy or jealous or angry, they can go to the gym, they can walk around the block, they can play with the dog, and they're done. They're good. You see them every day. They go to the gym, they work out, or they hit out a bucket of golf balls, and they're good. With us, the brain is wired to drive you into what it knows will take away the pain of those emotions. And for us, it's food. It's food. And food, as Dr. Silkworth tells us, will instantly create an effect. What is that effect? It is a sense of ease and comfort that comes instantly by eating the food. Now, if that's all that was wrong with me, I would carry a Batman utility belt filled with M&Ms with peanuts, and I would pop one in my mouth every time I got mad or happy or glad or sad or whatever, and that would work beautifully. The problem is that's only half of what's wrong with me. That's only half of the double whammy. The other half of the double whammy is the physical allergy, which once that M&M or once that Kit Kat or whatever it is inside of me, it is going to create instantly a physical craving, the allergy, for more of the same. In a normal person's body, the more food they eat, the less food they now want. In my body, the more I eat, the more I want, the more I want, the more I eat, the more I eat, the more I want, the more I want, the more I eat, and it's just endless. Now, if I can't eat because of the allergy and I can't keep from eating because of the twist of the mind, I am powerless over food. I lack dominion over food. Sometimes when I sponsor and people are struggling with that, I say, we admitted we were powerless over our human emotions and our food has become unmanageable. And what's a fella to do? Well, the only solution we have, keeping in mind there's no earthly explanation as to why I have this disease, although some of us want to blame mom, we want to blame dad, we want to blame the Democrats, blame the Republicans, blame whatever. There's no earthly explanation as to why we have this disease, and there is no earthly remedy. We can look for earthly remedies, but we will die in the process unless we come to this conclusion that our only defense must come from a higher power. And as we look at that second step, the wording is critical. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Notice it does not say came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sobriety. Notice that it doesn't say came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to abstinence. It says came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Because the mere abstinence from food is not sanity. As a matter of fact, you've got people in OA today, and I was one of them, that are stark raving abstinent. They're stark raving abstinent. They are not working a program that is producing a spiritual awakening. They're hanging from the chandeliers, very abstinent and very, they're not eating. They're going to go home and not eat. But sanity denotes that there's going to be more work in front of us. And so we, God, as we understand God, we as sponsors must help people to come to a power greater than themselves that they are at peace with. Because so many people try to work a program around a God that is adversarial to them or a God that they do not believe in. And they're going to try to turn their life, which is their action, and their will, which is their thinking, over to the care and direction of that God. And they don't have a peaceful, amiable relationship with that God. I wouldn't turn over my cup of water to somebody that I didn't have a good relationship with. And so for many of us, this concept of God that is adversarial or unworkable is the death of us. So we have to work with people in coming to some description of that God that we are going to be okay with. And once we are okay with that God, it is not a permanent thing because life changes. Food plans change. I'm 65 years old. I'll be 66 in May. If I ate the way I ate 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago, I would gain weight in leaps and bounds. You wouldn't recognize me. I'd gain weight so fast. It was abstinent then. It's not abstinent now. So our concept of a higher power often must change. For me, it has to be liquid because things happen. There's three things that happen every day I wake up, right? I got older. That means things are changing. Things are changing, and my disease got worse. So I must do what I need to do to take action to bring that God into my life. And what's very, very critical for me is to remember that if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through service and self-sacrifice for others, he would surely drink again. And for us to drink is to die. With alcoholics, it is just like that. Then faith would be dead indeed. Faith without works is dead. So faith has to be a verb. It has to be an action word. If it's not an action word, it's useless to me. I am talking about me, not you. I cannot sit in the synagogue and pray every Saturday, or I cannot sit at home and pray and read theological books and expand and enlarge my spiritual life. Maybe that works for somebody else. They sit in church or synagogue or the mosque or whatever it is, and that works for them. It doesn't work for me. For me, I have to be out there, and if I don't smell some BO once in a while, or I don't smell some farts once in a while from somebody that's morbidly obese, that's dying in this disease, I'm next. If I'm not teaching this incessantly to others, I will die in the illness. And there's no way around that fact. Do I believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? Am I so pompous? Am I so egotistical? Am I so full of myself that I think I am the be-all and the end-all of the world? God, I hope not. It doesn't have to be a biblical or a religious deity. It has to be a power greater than myself. And there's nothing in here that says I must believe. All it says is, am I willing to believe? And how I demonstrate that willingness is not through sitting there going, I believe, I believe, I believe. I have to take action. This is not a program for people who need it. It is not a program for people who want it. This is a program for people who do it. And we look in this chapter and we look at the word agnostic, and what does it mean? It means ag, which means without, and gnostic means knowledge. He or she who is without knowledge. You could be an atheist like Jimmy Burwell. Jimmy was one of the original AA members, and you can work this program. You can be a believer. I've had seen rabbis and ministers and priests and nuns and deacons and religious people coming into program that wrestle with this idea of God. And if it's that hard, you're doing it wrong. It has to be simple. Do I believe in a power greater than myself? And what is that power? Just describe it to myself. That's all. And it can change minute to minute, day to day. And in closing, I just want to say what's at the bottom of page 43. Once more, this is the chapter more about alcoholism. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. And if we are able to tap into that, that's where you fly. That's where you recover. And where you see people struggling mightily, usually it's 2, 10, and 12. 2, 10, and 12. And the bottom line is still this. Without a higher power, for me, recovery is impossible. There's no earthly explanation as to why I have this disease, and there is no earthly remedy for this disease. It must come from a higher power. And with that, we're done. We'll open it up for sharing.
Okay, so the meeting is now open for questions or 3-minute pitches. And we ask that you limit your share to 3 minutes and confine your share to experience, strength, and hope on the topic discussed today. The session ends at 10:15.
Okay, I'm Eileen. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you, guys. So I came in the program in 1974. I was 17. I read an Ann Landers column about this, not eating. And I knew this was it. Don't pick up the first bite. So I've been in program, you know, I'm 63 now, right? And I have, at this point, 5 years, what I would consider full abstinence. So I've been through the whole relapse, recovery, gray sheet, the whole game of being a rebel and not really getting in, through all kinds of iterations. And about 5 years ago, it was either clean, sober, and abstinence, blow my head up, because you can die of compulsive overeating or you can die from compulsive, the disease up. It doesn't matter. And I got in the middle of the herd. I got a sponsor, worked the steps first time. I think I had worked them somewhere back in like 1979 in Boston or something. And then I worked them by myself for the rest of my life. So I've done this. Okay. So I'm fairly okay now. But I get myself in jackpots all the time. I can have a very successful life. I have to tell my sponsor and my people in OA what I'm doing with truth, all the red light signs, and I have to follow an action to act completely contrary to what I would do normally because I will get other addictions, right? I read the big book like this. It's a textbook. What's the problem? The problem is a lack of a spiritual experience. It doesn't matter to me. The food, emotions, as my sponsor says, comes and go. The cognitive thinking and reasoning, obsessive thinking, that's not the issue. The problem is a lack of a spiritual connection. What's the solution? This is how it works. Action, do what you're told, and you get out of jackpots and perhaps, you know, lead a life that's calm and full of service. So I don't know. In closing, it's like I just have to shut up. You know, I just have to listen. I have to tell the truth, and I have to, you know, follow the actions of the program, and then my life will be okay, and I can be of service. So I have maybe 20 more years of life now. When I was 17, I could throw 10 years under the bus or be gray sheet abstinence and take one bite and go off after 10 years. Could throw decades under the bus. And, you know, I have decades now, but not many. And but some people get into this program in the beginning and they really get in. For me, it took 40 years to really get in and a lot of struggle. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Leon, gratefully recovered compulsive overeater from South Carolina. This is my question to any of you. Why? I laid on the couch and I cried out, God, please take this away. Only to get up and go to my pantry and eat. Only to go back to the couch and say, God, please take this away. I went to my preacher. I sat on his couch and I told him I had trouble with food. I went to a counselor, sat on his couch, and told him I had trouble with food. I went to the altar of my church and cried out, saying, God, please take this away. And I stayed away from program when I learned about it because I felt like I was cheating on God. And years of just battling up and down, not knowing anything about this disease. And I come to this program, and I learn about this disease, and I get a sponsor. I'm desperate to, at this point, I will do anything. I mean, this thing is not working. If I have to cheat on God, I'm going to cheat on God. And I get in the program, I get a great sponsor, and we get to step two, and I feel like I'm cheating on God. And he tells me, maybe you're seeing God from a different angle. Maybe you're seeing a different side of God. And I never thought about that. And I go through these steps. And I'm living in this program now. And I still cannot answer the question, why could I not? And I've heard a speaker say this, you know, sitting in church pews has never put the food down for me. And that's true for me, you know. Praying, reading in the Bible never took the food away, never got me to a point of where I am now. Why couldn't I do it that way? And I'm not at all upset that I had to work the steps, and I'm very grateful for this program. But if you can put in words, Leon, this is why this thing worked this way. Because now I see God in a totally different way. This God I thought I didn't understand, he is all-powerful, all-loving, and I just didn't know it. But how were the steps able to do what I could not do in and of myself? That's my question.
Thank you. All of us? Okay. So for me, I too prayed many, 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 many times, you know, God, please. And then I would even do the research and here's the diet, God, you know, it's healthy, God. I'm sure you want me to do this, God, because you don't want me to be fat and you want me to be happy and you want me to be all. But it was still Nancy running the show. So I was like, God, would you like to be my assistant on this? You know, I think that would be really lovely because I think this is what I should do. So God, would you help me do this? And I think when I finally submitted in this program, it was really a point of, okay, God, I don't know what this is going to look like. I don't know what my relationship with you is going to look like. I don't have any clue. I'm just going to follow what it says in the big book. And I'm going to trust that all these people that I've met who told me that they now have a relationship with God and that they're now recovered and all those things, I'm going to trust that they're telling me the truth, that they're not just making it up. And I did it and it happened. And so now, like you said, I have a completely different relationship with God. And I think, so to me, it sort of ties into, I was still running the show before.
Bill?
Well, I guess I'm coming from the place where I am an atheist, looking at my belief in God as more a mental therapy. So when things don't work, I don't sort of really feel like something has gone wrong with God or something like that. I just sort of keep going with it, try something different, and I don't get disappointed.
June 5th of 2018, I had my knee replaced, my left knee. It was my fourth replacement surgery that I've had. I've had two knees, two hips. There is a price to pay for weighing 700 pounds. And when I got out of the hospital, I knew because of the experience that I had with the other three replacements that the surgeon could only do so much. The surgeon could only rearrange things and cut and put the other knee in there and do this and that. Other than that, it is up to me to go to physical therapy. It is up to me to walk. It's up to me to take action. And the most important thing I can do with faith is to demonstrate. Demonstrate means to show through action. And if I don't take that action, nothing is going to help me. I would be a cripple today. I've had my knee replaced by a top surgeon in Scottsdale, Arizona. Top guy. If I didn't go through physical therapy and hell that they put me through there, my God, and I didn't do my walking and my pool exercises, I walk against the resistance of the water, I would be a cripple today. Faith without works is dead. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through service and self-sacrifice for others, He will surely drink again, and for us to drink is to die. Then faith would be dead indeed. And for me, I have to remember St. Francis. I'm a Jewish boy, but I love St. Francis of Assisi, who is a Jesuit, who was a Jesuit priest. He said, preach the gospel, and if you must, use words. So I need to get out there, and I need to act, action. And the faith never produced action. The action produced faith. One of the most misunderstood and overutilized concepts here is willingness. I'm willing. I'm waiting for willingness. I'm waiting for willingness. The Grim Reaper will get me before willingness will strike me. I have to take that action, and the faith comes. I take action, and the willingness comes. So to sit there and wait and say, hey, where's my faith? I might as well order up a couple of pizzas right now and just get settled in for a long night. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Okay, so the question was, could we each say something about what God looks like to us now? How do we say thy will be done and not mine and what that looks like? Is that what the question is? Okay, perfect. So for me, I became a believer in my religion when I was 16. I grew up in a non-religious household. And but then I spent all these decades, you know, trying to run the show and not trying to get God's will, at least as far as the food was concerned. And in reality, my whole life was still Nancy running the show. Today, I believe deeper in my faith that I came to as a teenager, and I believe stronger in that God. And I know that from my experiences that when I say thy will be done in my life and I'm ready to surrender it up, amazing things happen. The very least of which, maybe the very greatest of which, is that, you know, I'm not in the food. I'm not seeking and searching elsewhere for happiness. That, you know, God gives me happiness. He gives me peace. He gives me contentment. He gives me all these things when I'm willing to say, okay, God, I believe that you have a plan for me. And that includes what I'm going to do in the next 5 minutes. And thy will not mine be done.
God is, for me, is more of a tool that kind of helps me with the behavior modification. To some degree, it allows me to recuse myself from making my own decision, making decisions about myself, because of the fact that I am somewhat biased. If I make them through the eyes of God, do what God does instead of necessarily what I want to do, I come up with different things. I think more or less in terms of doing things that are right and doing things that are beneficial to others rather than necessarily things to myself. So for me, my concept of God is really just a tool out there that helps me to get through life.
Thanks, Bob. For me, God is pure love and mercy. And come what may, he's there. And for me, love and mercy means he doesn't speak to me the way I spoke to myself for decades and decades of my life. A very, very smart person who I used to be married to said to me one time, if you spoke to your friends the way you speak to yourself, would you have any? God doesn't chastise me. God doesn't scold me. He doesn't excoriate me. He says, job well done. I'm sorry that didn't go your way. We'll be okay. We'll be okay. There are things that have happened in my life in recovery. I've gotten divorced 9 years ago, almost 10 years ago, in recovery. My income has slid way down in recovery. I have gotten older in recovery. I've had health issues in recovery. And through it all, I have not found it necessary to pick up food. Compulsive overeat. I mean, I eat every day, but you know what I mean. I haven't eaten compulsively. Through it all, I haven't seen the need to lash out at other people in anger. Through it all, I have done service. And when I walk to God, he runs to me. He runs to me. And that's what he looks like to me, is he looks like a parent of me as a toddler, and I'm taking my first few steps, and he's holding his arms out to me, and he says, Harlan, walk to me. And he can't control himself anymore. He runs, and he picks me up, and he kisses me, and he holds me, and he protects me. And that's what it looks like for me, because I've seen the onslaught of this food. I've seen what food can do at its ugliest form. And I don't have to live that way anymore. We talked about decades of our life. I threw decades of my life at this disease. And I don't know how much time I have left, but I don't have to give this disease one more second. And that's God.
Thank you all. Hi, I'm Alan. A food addict. I'm visiting from Virginia. I've been in the fellowship just over 30 years. By the grace of God, I'm about 150 pounds under my top weight for about 25 of the 30 years. I'm not religious. Never quite had a good word for what I am, but religious wasn't it. And when I came into this program, there was all these words, spiritual, higher power, God, this, that. And I've always like fuzz with them. What do they mean? Try to play the game. Write one ads for my higher power, this and that. And about 5 years ago, I ended up marrying a linguist, a professor of linguistics. So I always ask her, what does this word really mean? And she always says to me, words are very fluid things. They can kind of mean different things. They change context, reference. They really don't mean anything. They're just pointers to ideas, and you can use them however you want. I started to look at the word spirituality. Does that mean I do yoga? I'm a vegetarian? I'm connected to an energy field? I like astrology? What does spirituality mean? You know, there are these big fuzzy things. And so, but what really helped solidify things for me was about 2 years ago, I started sponsoring a guy who was an atheist. 30 years in OA, never had more than 30 days abstinent, couldn't get anywhere near goal weight. And now he's within a few pounds of goal weight and got 18 months of abstinence. And I had to really work hard because he was like, I don't want to hear the word higher power, spirituality, God, any of that, you know? And you'll see I've got this T-shirt, which I actually made for him, that says, OA is my higher power. And that worked, you know? Higher power, is it higher above? Is it higher greater? Is it a power? Is it a process? You know, like, it doesn't really matter what words you map onto it, you know? I do know the fellowship. I think the fellowship should be a tool, because having a safe space to really share who you are and get love and acceptance is infinitely powerful, just infinitely powerful in my experience. And the steps are a wonderful set of things, not an end-all and be-all. The tools are really useful, and different ones in different ways. There's no perfect thing, you know, like I've learned in my 30 years, whatever works. Some people are into the colors of the food. It helps them. Other people just eat all sorts of things I'd never consider, but it works for them, you know? We're just such a big space. But if anything, if I could encapsulate what I've learned in my 30 years is you find a set of actions that support abstinence, and then you make them habits. You just do them over and over again. If it's very steppy and you 12-step all your problems and you're into Vision for You, Big Book, great, and I've done some of that for years. If it's more working with people, if it's prayer, meditation, going to meetings, picking up the phone, whatever process works that puts you in a state of mind so I don't need to use food to cope, figure that out, do it, and repeat it and repeat it. And then if it's not working, add something or remove something. And working with that, with this man, he now has worked through the steps, made amends, is in touch with his heart. Guy's a lot of trauma. But he's abstinent, and he's almost a goal weight. Thanks.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Des M., compulsive overeater. Hi. Oh, it's so great. My heart's just really full right now. And just to share some gratitude, which for me is step two, because without my higher power, I'm not grateful. I'm just in fear, right? My heart's beating like when I asked you a question on a special edition months back. And I just want to share a God shot today, because that's part of step two for me is the little things in life that I never I just see differently. My whole attitude and outlook upon life has changed. So my whole attitude and outlook upon life, like in this moment, is that part of my recovery is doing things that make me uncomfortable, like standing up here. And my God shot for today that I'd like to share, and then if you guys would like to share a God shot, that's part of, if you don't, that's okay, this morning I was sharing in a meeting, some women approached me, and they happened to be Spanish speaking, and puedo hablar un poquito español, and I think I can speak a little Spanish, and I think that that's part of why I'm here this week, and apparently is to use that. I've thought about calling Marcella many times, but I haven't. And so I was introduced to a woman from talking to another woman from just opening my mouth like I'm doing right now and being uncomfortable. And she taught me the word diocencia, which is God shot in Espanol. So como coincencia is diocencia. I'm probably saying that wrong. That's okay. And then just now in this meeting, it just higher power is like, oh yeah, you've learned I've gone to junior high, started learning Spanish, high school, junior college. So I've taken like a decade of Spanish, just like I took a decade of learning diets, right? And it didn't work because I was too nervous before I worked the steps to say anything in Spanish and like become fluent. So that's my God shot for this morning. And I started talking to her because she had turquoise earrings. And I pointed that out. And I have turquoise on my wedding ring. And those are little God shots for me. So if that's something, if you'd like to share una diocencia with us, I would love it. And thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, Gavis. Well, for me, I was going to say just being on this panel. So I went to the Colorado State Convention, and I was asked I shared at the convention, and I was a speaker, and I was asked if I was coming here, and you know, would I do this? And at first, I was like, I hadn't thought about it, but then I was like, well, yes, I'll do that. And then when they called and asked me which panel I wanted to be on, they said this one or another one. And I said, well, you know, I'm open to whatever you want, you know, and I was praying about it. And then about like a second later, the person who had texted me and asked me said to be on this one. And I was like, well, thank you, God. And I texted back to the person and I said, you know, you gave me God's answer. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to be here.
Okay, God shot. I woke up this morning. That was the first one. And I looked around, and there were about 1,000 or 1,100 of my closest friends here at the LAX Hilton. And this is a beautiful convention. I look forward to this convention all year long. And a God shot for me, in a world that does not understand why I ate, in a world that does not condone what I did to myself, and they didn't tell me you have an illness. They just said you're weak, you're stupid, you lack character, you need to push yourself away from the table. I have a place to go. I have a place to go where I can understand and be understood, where the language of the heart is spoken fluently. And the language of the heart is that message, is that language that we only speak and understand. No one else, you cannot teach this to somebody that doesn't have this illness. You could teach me all day long what it's like to be a pigeon and fly around and crap on a statue. I will never get it. It is not my reality. It's not my reality. What is my reality is what it's like with tears streaming down your face and to eat railroad cars full of Doritos because I ate railroad cars full of Doritos. You don't have to teach me that. I already know it. You don't have to teach me the joy and the euphoria of recovery. I already know it, and it gets better and better and better every day. And the most melodic sound I've ever heard, I heard today, and that is the laughter and the conversation between the people in this room and all the other rooms going on right now that have been not only dead, you don't have to be dead to be dead, not only dead, but hoping for death more than life because they couldn't find a way out of this disease, that have found that path, and we can laugh together, and we can cry together, and we can recover together, and we can do God's work together. That's the God shot that I got today. And I don't need more of it than that. That is enough to keep me going for at least 4 to 5 seconds before I'll... No, I'm just kidding. But it's a beautiful God shot. Each and every one of your faces is evidence that there is a God.
We have time?
Yes, we do.
Hi, everybody. I'm Robin. I'm a compulsive overeater. I've lost 140 pounds. I've been abstinent 14. Thank you, sir. I've been abstinent 14 years, and it's because of having a sponsor. It's not a solitary. It's an us, we, borrow a phrase, super, give me a program. I would like to, there's so many passages. The big book is my blueprint for recovery. I heard that elsewhere, but it is my blueprint for recovery. What does that mean to the panel? We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. What does that mean for the panel and exclude God? There's courage there for me in saying, forgive me, you're an atheist, but exclude that. What does it mean to be happy, joyous, and free in the program? How did you achieve that? Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So for me, happy, joyous, and free is such a contrast to my life before, because my life before was all about the obsession. And every now and then, the obsession will come back, not about food, praise God, but the obsession will come back and I'll start thinking obsessively. Like a couple Christmases ago, I was arranging everybody and their brother airline schedules to go somewhere. And everybody's coming from somewhere else, and they're all going at some different time, and who could pick them up, and who could, you know, all that. And I would spend hours on all of the different flight, you know, reservations and trying to get this reservation. And that had been my behavior before. Everything I did, I needed to do it perfectly. And if that meant I spend hundreds of hours doing it, that's what I would do. Today, I'm able to recognize that I don't need to be that way anymore. And that if I start going that way, that I am not relying on God, and that God doesn't want me to be obsessive about anything, and that I don't need to fall into that obsession anymore. So happy, joyous, and free. You know, like I said, when I first shared, my life used to be constrained with I'm running away from my life. I'm just holding on as long as I can and then running away. Today, that doesn't happen. Today, I can do all the things that I'm supposed to do and enjoy what I'm doing and not feel like I have to escape. And so that's what my life looks like with me saying, thy will be done and not mine. Thank you.
Happy and joyous and free for me kind of means not really being bounded by the addiction. I do other things, have other things in my life. They really keep me busy, rather than concentrating on food or when I'm getting that next meal and hoping that I can get hungry. Yes.
Thanks. For me, happy, joyous, and free means not only am I not compulsively overeating, but I don't want to. And happy, joyous, and free means I'm working the steps and I'm working with others. Happy, joyous, and free does not come from abstinence. Happy, joyous, and free does not come from going to meetings. Happy, joyous, and free does not come from making and taking phone calls or whatever. It comes from the working of the steps. And in the working of the steps, three things will happen. I will get right with God. I will get right with myself. And I will get right with my fellow human being. And that means I walk the streets a free man. A very wise man said to me decades ago, if everything you did today, everywhere you went today, everything that came in and out of your mouth was on the front page of the Chicago Tribune, are you okay with that? Because if you're not okay with it being on the front page of the Chicago Tribune, you are engaging in behaviors that may have nothing to do with food that you are ashamed of, and that will drive you back into the food. I can engage in behaviors today. I'm not writing bad checks. I'm not compulsively overeating. I'm not character assassinating anybody. I'm not lying when the truth would serve me better. And that freedom and that joy comes from the working of the steps. And for me, there's no greater joy than seeing people coming in here broken and battered and abused by this disease. This disease is permanent, progressive, and fatal, and it's unmerciful in what it will take from you. It will take everything, every shred of dignity, it will destroy. Happy, joyous, and free means I'm seeing other people trudging that road of happy destiny, free of the food and free from the desire to kill themselves with food and other behaviors. And with that, I'll let it go.
Come on up. I was asked if we would share our phone numbers. So I'm Nancy, S as in Sam, and it's 719. Yes? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. No, we're not. But one of the people had a question, and their question was, would we share our phone numbers?
Oh, sure.
Yes. Okay, Nancy, S as in Sam, 719-640-3343, and I'm in Mountain Time.
Bill Williams, and my number is 310-492-5998. I'm in Los Angeles. 5998.
Why don't you repeat it?
310-492-5998.
What time zone is that?
Pacific.
Thanks. I'm Harlan, and my phone number is 480-495-8961. 480-495-8961. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. Oh, it changes because we're on Mountain Time in the winter and Pacific Time in the summer because we don't change, but everybody around us changes.
All right, so questions, back to questions. Yeah, come on.
Hi, Nancy.
I'm not a planner in my life where I'm really struggling with the whole God bit because I feel like I have like an emergency from God when things are going great.
Can we ask you to come up because they're not getting this on the recording and they're not going to know what we're answering.
Sorry.
Or what we're going
to oh, hi, Nancy, compulsive overeater. So basically, I, as I mentioned, I'm struggling with the whole God bit. When things are great, I lean on God. When things aren't, I don't. And I feel like recently I've been living in a state of fear, like just complete fear of losing the things that I've gotten from this program, like the physical recovery, my job. And I know that a piece of it is because, I'm afraid of people, like, finding out that I'm, like, being dishonest or that I'm a fraud or that I don't know what I'm doing. Just fear, just scared all the time. So any suggestions on, like, kind of, any suggestions, actually, on, like, how to turn my life over when, like, the fear feels paralyzing. Thank you.
So I love that description, fear feels paralyzing. So thank you for that question. When I'm in fear, I know that I have to turn to God because everything I've done before never worked. And so, you know, my go-to when I was full of fear was to go research, go figure out something new, go do. It was always do something. And I would find myself spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning. And I can't do that anymore. And I know from my experience that I've done that so many decades of my life that I can't do that. I just can't do it anymore. And I've seen God answer prayers and change me and turn me into a different person. And so, and I've seen other people be changed and turned into different people, that I'm like, okay, I have to believe that. I have to step out. I have to believe it. When I stepped out and did the 12 steps in the big book the first time, I felt like I was on a cliff, and I was going to step off the cliff and do it because you told me to do it. And you said, this will work and your life will get better. And my life was so awful, I was willing to step off. You know, it's kind of like that Indiana Jones thing where he puts his foot there and then the bridge has appeared. It was kind of that feeling for me. And so today, when I get into fear, and I will start to get fearful about something, and I will have to recognize, I will do a 10th step on it. I will recognize that this is not where God wants me. I've got to do something to get, as Harlan says, get away from this buildup of human emotion. Because if I fall into that spiral, eventually I'm going to go back into the food. And so the steps give me an outlet, and that is the 10th step, to recognize my fear and to surrender it.
No.
Okay. I'm not hearing step work. When I'm in fear like that, the two places I need to remember is steps 2 and 10, for sure. 10 is just not, I don't know where you are in the steps, but step 10 is just not being done there. And with step 10, that's God's cold shower, I really can assuage that fear. And that's what's not being done. 11 is not being done. And I don't know about 12. Are you sponsoring other people? Are you doing? Well, that's where a lot of it comes from. And the conception of God that we seem to get, I don't want to single you out, that he's going to take things away from me. He's going to hurt me. That is something that we need to work on. And as we said at the very beginning, we need to work as hard on our conception of God as we do on our food plan. What kind of God do I have in my head? That's the question. What kind of God do I have in my head? And I'm just not hearing step work. I'm not hearing step 10 at all. And that's where we need. But I don't know what your history is. Maybe we need to go back and start with a sponsor and start with somebody and look at step 1 and go all the way through again, but do it quickly, not slowly. Because eventually that doubt, eventually that shame is going to drive me back into the arms of an Almond Joy bar. There's no question that Almond Joy bar is going to do for me what I could not do for myself. And for about 9 seconds, that Almond Joy bar is going to make the world a beautiful, groovy place. But it only lasts for about 9 seconds. God will last forever. We need to take the steps. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Turn around and face the room, because sometimes when you're sitting over on this side and everybody's talking this way, couldn't hear a thing. I know some of the people in this room. My name's Dave. I'm an alcoholic and a food addict. I know some of the people in this room, so what I'm going to say is a little difficult to say, but I really would like to get an honest answer, if possible. Well, your interpretation of it, and that is firing people. Just simply saying, you know, well, it's working, what we're doing here, it's just not working. And I need to go on with somebody else who it will work with. Good luck. Go get somebody else. You know, I'm sober a long time, and I've sat in a lot of AA meetings. And I've looked out on that wall, and I've read that statement of responsibility, which says, anytime, anywhere, when someone reaches out the hand to AA, my responsibility is there to take it. Why the hell can't we do that here? You know, I'm just... I didn't expect to be this emotional about it. But I tell you, you know, I've lost 170 pounds here. And then, no, wait a second. It's not a clap, because I turned around and regained 100, because I thought I could do this thing in Hawaii with no meetings, AA, restaurants, and a scale. And it doesn't work. We all know that kind of stuff. But coming back in OA and now in Vision and whatever, I still can't get understand this business of saying, sorry about that, Bubba, you know, go someplace else. I can't work with you. Good luck. Comments, please.
So I take it you're saying a sponsor is saying that to you. Yeah. Okay, thanks. So I think that there's difficulty there. You know, I think that becomes a question. You know, what is my responsibility? My responsibility is to help somebody. Clearly, that's my responsibility, to pass on what I've been given. Then the question becomes, what's their responsibility? And then where does that go to? And I think, you know, I worked with one girl for a year of her not being abstinent. And she finally got tired of talking to me because, you know, we really had nothing to talk about, you know, because I was like, I would like you to do this and I would like you to do this. And so she pulled away herself, you know, so I didn't fire her. You know, so I agree that the big book says you have to be abstinent from your addictive substances to work the steps. My experience, I worked the steps decades ago. Not being abstinent, I got that much recovery. The main thing I learned was that the steps were the answer, but I didn't get the answer yet until I worked it abstinently. So for me, I know that's truth. And so I will share that with people and I will ask them to be abstinent before we start working. The question is, of course, well, then what if they aren't? And then how do we do that? And you know, I've heard in the rooms that, well, if you know, if you're not able to stay abstinent, then perhaps I'm not the right person for you. But that's, I believe that's individually every time. That's an individual conversation.
Page 96 of the big book. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. I have the responsibility pledge in my heart to reach out, to open the hand of OA to those who urgently seek it. For this, I am responsible. But I am not a believer in will and won't. I'm not a believer in can or can't be abstinent. I'm a believer in will and won't. And if a person wants this badly enough, they will put down the food. And if they don't put down the food, I'm not doing them any favors mollycoddling them. Because there are a lot of people in OA today that want a membership card stamped. They want to think, I have a sponsor. No, if you have a sponsor, you demonstrate through action what that person is telling you to do. And if you won't put the food down, and I don't use the word can't, if you won't put the food down, I let them go. I say, I am not helping you. I am killing you. And I will not co-sign someone's bullshit. I will not co-sign someone's illness. I turn them loose. They need to hear a different voice. And if at some point they put the food down, and if at some point they want to come back to me and say, you know, I've thought it over, I'm willing to go to any lengths, not because I'm a hard ass, not because I've got all the answers, but I'm working the program, I'm doing the steps. If they're not putting the food down, then there's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to talk about. If they want to drag out a fourth step to weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, there's nothing to talk about. This is best done quickly. It is best done quickly. And you have to have the food down for 2 days. If you can't put the... And it is going to suck. I was new in abstinence. What do you think? I don't remember. I was new in abstinence. I remember the headache in the back of my head and the dry heaves from the withdrawal of the sugar. I remember those days. I remember vomiting in my mouth because I wasn't eating whatever. But we all got to go through that. You don't demonstrate willingness by continuing to call me and say, sponsor me. You demonstrate willingness by putting the food down and doing what it takes to recover. You want what I have? Do what I do. You don't want what I have enough to do what I do? Hasta luego, baby. That's all I can do. I only have so much time, and I am not helping them. I'm killing them by continuing to make them think they have a sponsor and they're working the steps when they're not. I'm not going to lie to them, and I don't want them lying to me.
Thank you. Okay, we have time for one more. Come on. Yes.
I'm Anita, compulsive overeater. God, this is crazy. I'm a forever newcomer. I've been going to meetings for 18 months, and I haven't started doing anything. So I really, Harlan, I really appreciate what you said about, like, I kind of forgot. Like, you have to work it. You have to actually to do the thing, because just sitting, that the faith is not, my biggest problem is with faith. That's why I always drop out. It's the faith is not coming to you if you're just sitting in the meeting. You have to actually do the action, and then it might come. My biggest problem is, like, sometimes I thought I had found a higher power. So sometimes I thought I have found a higher power, but then I don't know how to surrender, because I'm willing to surrender. And I say, I've even gone to my knees and said, I'm surrendering. And then the moment I stop saying it, there's nothing happening. I'm waiting for the miracle. So if you could just maybe talk about surrender. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Anita. So I love that. I found that for me, the surrendering had to be, I'm going to do the steps. And so, you know, I was thinking I was surrendering all these other times in my life, but until I actually said, I'm willing to do the steps, I'm willing to do every single thing that this big book tells me to do and that my sponsor tells me to do, that turned into my surrender. And then after that, I can say, thy will be done and not mine.
I surrender by working the steps. And if I'm not going to work the steps, I'm not in surrender. This is not a philosophical class. I'm not going to sit in my house and say, I surrender, I surrender. Surrender means I am working the steps. What is the purpose of step three? So that we make a pact with God to do the rest of the steps. How long should step three take? About 30 seconds. If it's taking longer than that, we're doing it wrong. I turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand God. How do I do that? By working 4 through 12 every day for the rest of my life. The program is in working the steps. If I'm waiting for some epiphany of willingness, I'll be dead long before that comes. I must take action. I must have an informed, recovered sponsor. I must take action. This is not a program for people who need it. This is not a program for people who want it. It's a program for people who do it. And that faith, that willingness, is not just going to come to me by osmosis. Osmosis means I'm going to sit in meetings and wait for it to come up my gluteus maximus. It don't work that way. I have to take action, and with that, I'll pass.
Okay, so thank you so much. If you did come up and ask a question, if before you leave you sign the release form that says that you know your voice is on the recording, and that's all right. Let's see. So it's now time to close. Let's thank our speakers and all who have done service for this session. If you enjoyed the workshop, we encourage you to stop by the tape table to order copies of this session or other sessions. All workshops and main speaker events are being recorded and are available on CD or as electronic download. Let's join hands and say the Serenity Prayer.
Telepathy.
God.
Let me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can.